Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good afternoon and welcome to the News Talk 830 WCCO debate. I'm Blaise Wilson. I'll be your moderator for the next hour as we welcome Representative Dean Phillips and Kendall Qualls, his Republican challenge. We're going to kick off this debate with opening statements, for each will be a minute. And then when we return at the end, we'll each have a closing statement in a minute. Mr. Qualls, you'll go first with your opening statement.
Okay, great. Thank you, Blaise. I want to thank your listening audience for joining us. You know, I grew up in a family that were all Democrats. In fact, they still are. However, I took a different route. At the age of 18, I registered as a Republican. At that time, Ronald Reagan was in his first term of office as president. So you see, I've been living with these beliefs and values as a Republican for decades. It's not new to me. The only thing that's new is that I decided to take a stand for our country and run for elected office. You see, I started my life in poverty. I paid my way through college. I served our country in the Army for 5 years. Later, I led global teams with Fortune 100 companies. My wife and I, we've been married for 34 years, and we've raised 5 wonderful children. Yes, the American dream does still work for me and for millions of other people. Today, I'm asking for your vote, and I'm asking for your vote with this in mind. We won't agree with each other on every vote that was cast in Washington, but here's a promise. I'll make you proud of that vote that you do cast for me as your next congressman. Thank you.
Thank you, Kendall Qualls. Now I turn to Representative Dean Phillips for a 1 minute opening statement.
Thank you, Blaise. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. I'm having some flashbacks to 1991, but not going to let that get in our way today. And since Chad's not with us today, I want to also extend my condolences and love for the Hartman family. I met Sid Hartman at the old Met Stadium in the early 70s, and I think I was as excited and starstruck to meet Sid Hartman as I was to meet Chuck Foreman or Frank Tarkington. So an extraordinary life, a life well lived, and somebody that we're all going to miss in the Twin Cities. But my name's Dean Phillips. I'm a lifelong Minnesotan, a father, a husband, an entrepreneur, and I became a Gold Star son when I lost my father, Artie, in the Vietnam War in 1969. I'm honored now to serve in the U.S. Congress representing the very community in which I was raised. And I'm excited about our future. I love my job, and I'm optimistic about the United States. I also believe that representation begins with listening, and that means to all of you, not to special interests. That's why I don't accept PAC money, I don't accept special interest money, I don't accept federal lobbyist money, and I don't accept money from fellow members of Congress. I'm the only member of Congress out of 535 to take that bold stand. I also believe that we have got to make America respectful again. And that's why I'm proud to be one of 25 Democrats and one of 25 Republicans who've joined the Problem Solvers Caucus. Now, we're building bridges across partisan divides, we're respecting one another, and we're working on policy to help America get through the COVID epidemic and beyond. And it's not just talk. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce recently named me one of the most bipartisan members of the entire U.S. Congress. I was able to pass a bill through the House, the Senate, and signed into law by President Trump, working with my Republican colleague in Texas, Representative Chip Roy. And that bill was passed 417-1 in the House. So we can get things done when we work together. I'm proud to do so. I think our best days are yet to come if we stick together. So thank you, everybody. And I remind you that everyone is invited.
Thank you for those opening statements. Now we'll move into questions. The first question is about the pandemic and COVID-19. Goes to Representative Phillips. I know you've worked with the Problem Solvers Caucus to try to create some alternative plans between the House and the Senate and the White House. Mm-hmm. What is it that really needs to be done in the next phase of relief? And how can it get done if Congress remains divided?
Well, Blois, I'm sorry to say that we never should have been in this position. The Trump administration has failed our country in protecting it. Its duty to protect us from one of the most challenging circumstances we found ourselves in our lifetimes. The fact that we still don't have a national testing and tracing policy in place is shameful. And that's why we've lost over 215,000 American lives so far. Over 8 million have been infected. And now as we approach the winter season and back to indoors for many Minnesotans, we're seeing COVID transmission increase yet again. All as the president demeans the use of masks, demeans the professionals and experts in his administration, and unfortunately has left us in a position where we have to rely on governors, Democrats and Republicans around the country who, absent a thoughtful federal response, have to take matters into their own hands. And this is the president and the administration that my opponent supports. He voted for President Trump in Colorado in 2016, just moved to the Twin Cities, in fact, and says he's going to vote for President Trump again. We should do better. We should have done better. And I intend to ensure that we do. Blois, you asked the question about how can we do better if we have a dysfunctional Congress. And that's why I ran for office. I'm a business person. I'm sick of the nonsense between both parties. But we passed the CARES Act in a beautiful bipartisan basis. We passed the HEROES Act 5 months ago. It's still sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk. And I'm proud of the work I just did with Representative Dusty Johnson, my Republican colleague from South Dakota. We co-led a working group of the Problem Solvers Caucus. We introduced the March to Common Ground bipartisan COVID relief framework just a few weeks ago. It was celebrated by both sides, endorsed by 25 Democrats, 25 mm-hmm. Republicans in the House. Treasury Secretary Mnuchin celebrated it. Even President Trump has said nice things about it. We believe it is the way to get something done. In fact, I'm awaiting your word any time now. There might be an agreement in principle forthcoming between Speaker Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Mnuchin. If that's the case, I'm very proud of the work we did because...
Thank you, Representative Phillips. Let's try to keep our answers to a minute, minute and a half at max. Mr. Qualls, there has been a lot of discussion and debate about the administration's response to COVID-19. If you were in Congress, what would you do differently to either work with the White House or to work with Democrats to find solutions around the pandemic?
Yeah, that's a great question, Blois. So first of all, let me just say this. The first thing we need to do is really reframe this whole discussion. Right now, we're going through a pandemic that none of us, all of us as Americans, haven't gone through in our lifetimes. And I want to put this in the same wave analogous to a fire station getting a call to put out a fire. Now, I'm sure if it's 20 or so firefighters, they all have different political backgrounds and beliefs, but they set those aside to focus on putting out the fire. So one of the things I would do, make sure we reframe this, is there's plenty of time to do Monday morning quarterbacking and after action reviews after we put out the fire of COVID. So I would make sure that we're working together as all Americans to resolve this issue. Now, number one thing we'll do is make sure we do much more testing that we can. We have a testing program so that employers, schools, those that are managing this pandemic have a good assessment of, from a testing standpoint, of the spread of the virus. The rapid deployment of a vaccine. We have 6 vaccines now that are in development, and one of those has just entered phase 3. And then right now, there's something that we can do immediately. We have $138 billion of unspent funds in the first package that was released. We can redeploy those funds for those businesses, schools, and communities that need it. Lastly, I want to say something. I want to respond to my opponent that he talked about me voting in Colorado and living in here. And, you know, this is something about the 3rd Congressional District. It's home to a lot of successful companies, headquarters, very innovative, and you know, Medtronic is one of those where I worked in Colorado and was asked to move here. And there's Target, there's other companies, Cargill, and other great companies that where this is a home base for a lot of those people. And they actually attract people from all over the country to come here and to participate in the economy and actually to call Minnesota home in some cases. So what I want to say to this, if my opponent wants to mock and ridicule me from having to extend time and relocation, because a lot of those people that work in those companies, they have to.
Okay. You'll have time to respond, Kendall, because the next question goes to you. So we'll continue. And again, let's try to keep our question answers to brief so we can get to as many topics as possible. Continuing with Kendall Qualls, you penned an op-ed today in the Star Tribune talking about race relations. And I wanted to understand how your view on fighting racism and the issues that Minnesota is ground zero on are different than those of Representative Phillips.
Well, sure. I could just first of all, is the whole concept of who we are and what we are as Americans. So here's the reality. This is a nuance, but it's an important nuance. Do we have racist people in our country? Yes, we do. Are we a racist country? Absolutely not. There are people all across this country that help others, that donate money, that spend their time to help their man, to help their fellow person in need all the time without a filter on race. The difference with my opponent is that he actually accused Minnesotans of having white privilege. And I know that there are people that voted for him that were offended by that comment because they have no idea what, he has no idea what they have done in their life to help people that were in need. And they are now supporting my campaign because of that lack of insight.
Representative Phillips, obviously this issue of race relations and racism has hit home here in Minnesota as a native Minnesotan. Do you hear concerns about racism in the 3rd District? And what's your role as the representative of a majority white district to help solve these issues?
Well, Blois, yes, I have lived here my entire life. And in fact, I am one of those people that my opponent just referred to, who has dedicated himself and my family as well to trying to resolve some of the inequities and to generate justice and to ensure there is opportunity for all. We've been blessed by this community. I'm a beneficiary of many who've come before me. And to answer your question, Blois, yes, I hear all the time. I believe representation begins with listening, not lecturing. And that's what I do. We have thousands of stories in this very district of people who have struggled under some of the current systems. My job is to listen. And I respect my opponent's life story. It's a wonderful one. Frankly, I wish he would respect mine as well. And if we did so, we can solve some of these problems. You know, I think everybody who's lived in the Twin Cities knows we have, unfortunately, too much to be embarrassed about, considering we're one of the most wonderful, prosperous communities in the country. Our median Black family in the Twin Cities earns less than half of the median Black family earns less than half of the white family. The Black unemployment rate is double that of the white rate. The Black poverty rate is over 25%, which is 4 times higher than the white rate and higher than the national average. 75% of white families own homes in the Twin Cities, only 25% of Black families. The Black incarceration rate is 11 times that of whites in the Twin Cities, and Minnesota has the worst educational achievement gap in the nation. So we've got to work together, Blois. I've been doing that my whole life, and I believe that we have to listen to people of all backgrounds, all circumstances, to ensure that we afford opportunity to everybody. And I believe that America won't realize its potential, frankly, until we do. Justice for all, equality for all, and opportunity for all. I'm writing bills to accomplish that right now. I'd love to work with my opponent.
It's time.
Representative Phillips, the next question is to you. You've talked about your own refusal of PAC dollars from other candidates, other members of Congress. Can you talk about your use of your own wealth in this race and why you think that's okay?
Well, Blois, in this race, I believe my opponent has invested more in his own campaign than I have in mine. I take a very unusual and very principled position that no other member of Congress has done yet, which is to not accept any PAC money, to not accept any special interest money, to not accept any federal lobbyist money, and not to accept any member money, fellow members of Congress, because the money game inside of Congress is just as despicable as it is on the outside. And I'm talking about Democrats and Republicans. Special interest groups, vested special interest groups around the country have an outsized influence in Washington. They affect too much policy, and they're muffling the very important quiet voices all throughout the country. And that includes right here in Minnesota's 3rd District. And in the last race, my first race for Congress against Eric Paulson, I was running against the 4th largest recipient of PAC money in the nation. And I issued him a simple challenge to do the same thing I was doing, including no self-financing. And he refused to take on an incumbent 4-term member of Congress, Eric Paulson. Yes, I did have to invest some, and I'm willing to do so because that way I'm beholden only to my principles, to the Constitution, and to the very people I represent. In this race, my opponent has invested more in his campaign than I have. I rely only on individuals. I'm proud of that because I speak and listen to only those who send me to Congress, not the special interests that I believe are playing an undue influence in my opponent's campaign. And it's too late because he's accepting PAC money and lobbyist money, and I presume fellow member of Congress money. And that means you owe somebody something. I do not.
Mr. Qualls, how do you view the donations to your campaign? And if you're elected, will you continue to accept corporate money or lobbyist money?
Well, here's the scenario. I mean, again, this is something I think one of the reasons why I decided to get into office and why a lot of Americans are disenchanted, you know, just frustrated with politicians because they say one thing, they do another. My opponent says that I have put in more money than his. I seriously doubt that. He's the 3rd wealthiest member of Congress. Not only that, he uses his own influence for himself. Let me give you an example. On February 28th, in a closed-door session on coronavirus, that very same day, he traded, or someone traded, over $500,000 of stocks related to coronavirus for a benefit of that information. Now, I don't know if that's linked or not between him and that information, but all of that traded on the same day. And for him to say that I've actually put more money in my campaign than he did is disingenuous. He still owes $250,000 from his campaign that he has on a loan on his books. Again, this is the duplicity that my opponent keeps doing throughout the campaign, and he did in the prior campaign, and we're going to just hold him accountable.
Representative Phillips, do you care to respond to the stock information and address any outstanding loans you have to your campaign?
I do, Blois. And my opponent knows the truth. And the truth is that he's talking about stock trades. When I decided to run for Congress, I made the point in the 2018 election to not have any correspondence with the people that manage my assets, that do the investment for me. I've not made a stock trade since 2018. I've not even spoken with the people that do. They buy and sell and trade just like the investment advisors do for a lot of people in the 3rd District all the time. The closed door meeting he's talking about, I'm not certainly familiar with what he's talking about, but everything is public. In fact, I'm the author of the Truth Act, the act that would ensure full transparency of every PPP loan. The ironic part, I would say, Blois, is that my opponent has said nothing about the most corrupt president in American history, a president who Republican Senator Ben Sasse just said looks at the presidency as a family business. My goodness, we want to talk about corruption. He's looking at the wrong person. I serve on the Ethics Committee. I hold myself to a higher standard than just about everybody in Congress. And for some reason, my opponent wants to talk about the 2018 election. I'm happy to. I took on a 4-time incumbent who was the 4th or 5th biggest recipient of PAC money in the nation. I challenged him to do this differently. We called it the Minnesota way. He didn't want to do it because he got so much money from PACs and special interest groups and lobbyists and members of Congress. So yes, I invested some money in my campaign, and I do still have a loan outstanding from it, but most of our money comes from individuals, and I think that's how we should finance campaigns, and someday I hope we can change that, because the rules are the rules right now. I abide by them. I always will, and the fact of the matter is, if you look at the reports, my opponent has put more money in his campaign this time than I have.
Time. As we wrap the first half of this debate, the final question I want to ask is, today the Justice Department has sued Google. Big tech has become a major influence in the dynamics of this country and business in this country. The next question would be to you, Mr. Qualls. Is there anything that you are concerned about when it comes to big tech and regulation in the United States right now?
Well, it's not just what I'm concerned about. I think all Americans are concerned about the restrictions of the First Amendment, is the freedom of speech. You know, who gets to decide what's okay and what's not? What kind of exemptions do these people have that we need to address? And again, this is another reason why I'm when you think about this, you know, these are the type of things that have been going on for years in Washington. This is not new. It could have been addressed years ago. And this is something I see in either party. So this is, I think American people are wanting just regular business people from different backgrounds coming into to Washington to solve problems that are just solutions oriented.
Representative Phillips, any policy proposals you have or concerns you have about tech's influence, both in our society and in regulation?
Absolutely, Boyce. Any of us living in this day and age recognize the great opportunities and great possibilities, also some of the great risks. Any of us who are parents know how technology is affecting our children. Those of us who've been in business know and can appreciate how monopoly power is never good for consumers or for a country. We have addressed that in the past, big oil in the early 20th century, of course. And yes, it is time that we look at this again. The consolidation of influence of power amongst big tech is significant, and I believe is reducing innovation, reducing competition, and is disempowering consumers. I would encourage people to watch The Social Dilemma, the new documentary that is eye-opening and extraordinary in what it exposes about the risks. So yes, it is time to do so. We're having hearings in Congress shortly. We've had some in the past. I've actually personally questioned Mark Zuckerberg about some of these issues and was not satisfied with the answers. So yes, on a bipartisan basis, we should investigate it. And we should ensure that in the United States of America, anybody with a good idea and ambition and drive have the opportunity to succeed. And if monopoly or duopolies prevent that, we have got to do something. Yes.
You're listening to the 3rd District Congressional Debate on News Talk 830 WCCO. This debate is brought to you by AARP, Minnesota's Credit Unions, and Minnesota's Corn Growers. Our guests this hour are Representative Dean Phillips and his Republican challenger, Kendall Qualls. I'm Blois Olson. When we come back, we'll continue with the debate for 30 more minutes. Brought to you by AARP, Minnesota's Credit Unions, and WCCO. Our guests are Representative Dean Phillips and Kendall Qualls, his Republican challenger. The next question is going to go to Representative Phillips. Representative Phillips, we talked a little bit about race relations, but we haven't talked about criminal justice reform. Minnesota is ground zero on this issue. Do you have any specific proposals that you believe Congress should hear, discuss, and pass in the next session related to criminal justice reform federally?
You know, Blois, I think it's one of the systems that as I listen, as I learn, as I do my own homework and come to the realization that we have to do better. Criminal justice reform is surely one of those. The incarceration rate for Black Americans is so much higher than white Americans. Part of that, frankly, was by design in the early 70s. In my estimation, some of our drug laws were designed to accomplish just that. And I do believe it's time that we investigate those and rectify those. You know, cannabis is a perfect example. Now, we have hundreds of thousands of people sitting in jails right now, a disproportionate number of them Black men who are in jail for low-level nonviolent drug crimes. And as everybody knows, in America, a number of states have legalized cannabis, and there are thousands of people, disproportionately white, getting very wealthy doing the same thing. So we have got to look at restoration of justice, restoration of equity, and ensure that everybody is treated the same way. And if we're not willing to look at some of the underlying issues, Blois, that result in some of these circumstances, we're doing our entire country a disservice. And that's why I believe in doing so much more than just criminal justice reform. Okay. Early childhood.
Kendall Qualls, on the issue of decriminalizing marijuana and criminal justice reform, where do you stand if you're elected to Congress?
Yeah, you know, boys, this is very personal to me. you know, I'm going to respond to the last segment as well as this segment. You know, I have family members. Again, I grew up in Harlem. This was my start in life. My family has been collateral damage through a lot of things. And I've had my sibling, younger sibling, actually died from drug overdose. So that's very personal. Like, well, here's the issue that we need to address. And that's where a lot of things we're hearing is for not just the police reform, but all the statistics my opponent just laid out in disparity of income and everything else. No one that wants to address one of the major underlying issues is the fatherless homes in the Black community. We did not used to live like this. This has been over a five-decade cascade of problems originating with original and well-intended social programs that has put the Black community in a situation like it's never been before. Unless we're willing to address those underlying issues, we're going to have the symptoms that everyone's laid talked about ongoing for a long time, to perpetuity, unless we ingest the family issue.
Pivoting to another issue that always comes up in elections, Social Security, the Social Security Trust Fund, and Medicare. The question is for you, Mr. Qualls. As we look at coming out of the deficit and the pandemic recession, do you have commitments you're willing to make to ensure Social Security is available in the future? Any changes that you would support to the Social Security Trust Fund?
You know, those type of programs need to be, you know, obviously taken a look at because of the commitments, number one, we have to seniors and the what they're relying on for their livelihood, but also how do we make sure that they're still around for future generations? And so there, obviously, this has been something that has been, you know, pushed down the road for many years by politicians. Again, why we need someone from outside politics, from the business community to take a look at it and can develop a consensus from a broad swath of people from different backgrounds and communities to come up with recommendations. I know there's already been made adjustments in my life from it, when it used to be 65, now to 67. There's going to be those types of things that we have to take a look at.
Thank you, Kendall Qualls. Representative Phillips, President Trump has proposed a holiday. It hasn't gone into effect, but there is a good chance that the Social Security Trust Fund is shortened in its full funding. Any proposals you have or would support in the next Congress to secure the Social Security Trust Fund?
Absolutely, Blois. In fact, first and foremost, I want everybody listening to know that one of my foremost priorities is to preserve, protect, and if anything, enhance, not entitlements, but the earnings, the money that so many of you have worked so hard for and have invested in our trust funds for Medicare, Social Security, and other programs. You've earned that. And it is my responsibility, along with my Republican colleagues, to ensure that that is preserved, protected, and hopefully enhanced. That's why I joined Senator Mitt Romney, my Republican colleague, of course, from Utah in the Senate, on something called the Trust Act, which is researching separate committees, researching each of the five core trust funds that finance our programs, including Medicare and Social Security. Because if we do nothing, they are on the path to being fully exhausted. In fact, Social Security by 2038, it's on the horizon. So yes, we have a responsibility to act. If we do nothing, which Congress has done for far too long, people are going to be in trouble. We're researching that right now, and I promise that I will not rest until we protect those funds. And furthermore, I think it's time that Americans have the chance, those that have done well in their lives, don't need their Social Security, to be able to return that, not to the Treasury, but to redirect it to some of the lowest income retirees in America who are really struggling, particularly right now because of COVID. I think tens of thousands of Americans would do so. We could help those.
Staying on the topic of the budget and taxes, next question is for you, Representative Phillips. Joe Biden has a new tax proposal on the table. It would roll back some of the Trump-era tax relief as well as some new taxes. Where do you stand on Joe Biden's tax plan, and what needs to be done to ensure that the budget deficit doesn't grow any further?
Yeah, well, Blois, and to listeners, we are now approaching a $27 trillion national debt. Our debt service exceeds $400 billion a year. We are spending more on the past than our country is investing in the future, in kids, in education, in healthcare, in housing. And that cannot continue. And I am a fiscally responsible Democrat. The 2017 tax bill, I believe, was a terrible disservice to our country. I agreed with a lot of it, including the reduction in corporate tax rates, because we need an incentive to keep companies and jobs here in America. I agreed with that. But many in the third district understand with the SALT cap, the state and local tax deduction, that's a big deal. That was part of that bill. But worst of all, it exploded a $1.5 trillion deficit at a time where we should have been paying it down, not expanding it. Joe Biden, I believe, has a reasonable plan where the burdens and needs of America are more equitably shared. No tax increases on anybody earning less than $400,000 a year. At the end of the day, we have got to come together. That's why I'm working with Mitt Romney, because we have got to match our country's needs with those in a position to help pay. And that means supporting our hardest working Americans who right now I want to provide relief for, and ensure that those who have been successful because of hard work or any other means are paying their fair share. There's too many loopholes that have to be closed. And I want equity and fairness. And I think we can achieve.
Kendall Qualls, to you, the Donald Trump has said that he would keep his tax cuts in place, maybe offer more if he's elected to a second term. What do we need to do on taxes and reducing the federal deficit?
Well, one of the things we need to do, boys, is focus on fiscal responsibility. We got to, number one, we have to get our economy back up and running, and also look at finding ways to cut our spending. But let's get that economy up and running first. I want to speak to something my opponent just said, though. He talked about fiscal responsibility. Again, he talks about being bipartisan. Both of those duplicity type comments has been consistent throughout his 2 years. When he talked about fiscal responsibility, he voted for the $3.2 trillion wish list that Nancy Pelosi pushed forward during the pandemic. Now, that's not fiscal responsibility, and it's not being bipartisan. In fact, he hides behind that because he's voted with Nancy Pelosi 99% on the House floor. The issue with this is not just that he's voting with his team, that it's inconsistent with the values and the direction and the business climate of the third district.
Representative Phillips, do you care to respond?
I absolutely care to respond. I it's clear that my opponent is digesting GOP talking points from his consultants and is misleading people. The fact is, I am bipartisan. That's why I ran for Congress. I'm the 27th most bipartisan member of the House, the 12th most bipartisan Democrat. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce awarded me with their bipartisanship award. One of every three bills that I co-sponsor was authored by a Republican. And I'm glad my opponent brought up the HEROES Act. It's a great point of difference. The mismanagement of COVID by this administration, the Trump administration, the president for which my opponent voted and continues to support and never criticizes, is the reason why we have got to even consider these trillion-dollar plus programs. We passed the CARES Act in a thoughtful bipartisan fashion, $2 trillion worth. And yes, unfortunately, we have to do more. We shouldn't have to be doing more, but we do. Talk to Federal Reserve Chairman Jay Powell. He will tell you that if we do not invest those dollars now, the cost down the road, lives lost, livelihoods lost, will even be greater. So I'm glad he brings that up. The fact is, I am bipartisan. I am proud of that. I will continue to be, because I've been disappointed in both parties, and my constituents know that.
Next question is to you, Kendall Qualls. Polarization is a major issue in Minnesota in the third district. If you are elected to go to Congress and President Trump is reelected or Joe Biden is elected, what is it that you would bring to reach out to the other side to turn down the rhetoric either of President Trump or others in your party who may not accept the election results?
Well, here's the scenario on this one, Boyce, and this is the reason why I got into the office. Throughout my career, it's all about what we have in common than what we have that are different, that separates us on our issues. In the military, leading people in uniform, as well as in the business community, it's all about what do we have in common, what are our common objectives that we can reach together. Those are the things that I've been doing in my entire adult life. No, I don't have to actually have a facade about the bipartisanship that my opponent does. When he talks about getting, for example, the endorsement from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, I don't know how you get an endorsement from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and get a failing grade from the National Federation of Independent Businesses. They represent the voice of small business for 75 years, and they give him a failing grade of 33%. The only one that gets a 33% in Minnesota is Ilhan Omar. That's the duplicity that we consistently see with my opponent. You can't be both. Just stand out. If you want to be on the left wing of the party, just go out and just do it with, like Bernie Sanders.
Time. Yeah, Blaise, may I respond to that?
Well, you actually get a similar question, Representative Phillips. Some in your party are also kind of not as cooperative as your tone has been, including Ilhan Omar. What do you need to do in the next Congress if you're reelected to tone down the polarization in our country?
Well, Blois, that's my entire mission. That's been my mission in this community for my entire life, in my business career, my philanthropic career, my career in this community, and now in the U.S. Congress. That's why I have been recognized by so many organizations and even my fellow members of Congress for being thoughtful and bipartisan. The numbers do speak for themselves. And I'm proud of that. What I will continue to do is continue to keep on keeping on. And I will also say to some of the people you just referenced, when I have a problem with somebody, I apply my kindergarten lessons that so many of us remember. I approach them personally. I don't condemn them on Twitter or make big public statements. I approach them. I've done so with Ilhan Omar. I've done so with Tom Emmer. I do so regularly with others. And that's how I operate. And I'm a proud leader of the Problem Solvers Caucus. We're the only bipartisan group doing what Americans want, sitting down together, respecting one another, looking at innovative ways to get our country through some of these very, very difficult times. I'm proud of that. I'm also proud of the fact that my bill, the PPPFA, the Paycheck Protection Program Flexibility Act, was done in partnership with one of the most conservative members of Congress, Representative Chip Roy, the 435th most bipartisan. I'm number 27. We got together, we heard our business owners in our district telling us PPP wasn't working well, and we got it passed. And the organization to which my opponent refers endorsed it. So I'm proud of my endorsement by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I'm proud of my broad coalition.
Representative Phillips, next question starts with you. The Green New Deal has been proposed by some in your party. Obviously, climate change is a topic that many people are concerned about, but many businesses are worried about the cost. What is your view on how business needs to act and where government's role is in regulation?
Very simply, Blois, being kind to the environment, reducing carbon emissions is not mutually exclusive with successful business. In fact, I think they're intertwined. There are elements of the Green New Deal that should be considered, but the plan is not even actionable at this stage. But we should be pricing carbon, a conservative notion that I support. In fact, I'm a co-sponsor of the Carbon Fee and Dividend Program. We have got to price carbon. Conservatives agree because there is a cost, and we should return those dollars not to the U.S. Treasury, rather to taxpayers. There is an extraordinary opportunity if we are willing to invest in the green economy. The Trump administration cares so little about the environment, it's sad. And my opponent continues to support that. And one of the greatest treasures, natural treasures in America here in Minnesota that we have to protect. Young people come to my office all the time and beg me to act on climate change, which I will, because we have a responsibility. And we can and will create millions of jobs by production tax credits for wind and solar, by providing incentives for green energy solutions. We will create jobs. We will create a whole new 21st century economy and ensure our planet is safe. I'm not worried about the survival.
Kendall Qualls, as you look at the issues of the economy, the Trump administration has rolled back several environmental regulations, but it is an issue that people in Minnesota care about. When it comes to the environment and the economy, what is your priority and how do you prioritize the balance between business and the environment?
Well, boys, let me just first say, first of all, you know, my wife and I, we have five children, and we have one that recently married. We have a son that graduated from St. Olaf last year, and he's got married, and we hope to have, you know, future grandchildren. I want them to have a clean, safe environment. I think we all want that. How we get there, there can be differing, you know, recommendations for that. So I'm in favor of making sure that we have a balance between our economy and also between what works and what's effective. I want to take a note, though. My opponent just brought up the PPP Flex program that he co-authored. You know, it was one of the things he said after he was quoted in the Star Tribune last August, that any company that's affiliated with an elected official shouldn't have access or shouldn't participate in the PPP program. The day the bill was signed, one of his companies got a six-figure PPP loan for it. Again, this is the one I'm talking about with Representative Phillips. It's not do as I say, but don't do as I do, but do as I say. And we got two Dean Phillips, one in Washington and one here, that says different things, but they do something very different when it gets to Washington, D.C.
Representative Phillips, because he brought up your name, you're going to have a chance to respond, but then we're going to immediately go into closing statements. So please keep it brief.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Blois. You know, it saddens me that my opponent finds it necessary to spread mistruths, and he knows the truth. I authored the bill. We voted on two bills that I authored on the same day, the Paycheck Protection Program Flexibility Act and the Truth Act, which was designed by me to ensure that every PPP loan was fully transparent to the American public, back to dollar one. Who voted against it? Republicans. My opponent also knows that I operate and own one business, Penny's Coffee. We have four coffee shops in the Twin Cities. And he's right. I did say that members of Congress, I didn't think it was appropriate for them to take a PPP loan, even though it was legal and even ethical. But I did not. The one business that I do own and operate, I did not take a PPP loan because I wanted other small businesses to be first in line. And I didn't like the notion of members of Congress benefiting from a plan that we passed. So I didn't do so. And I think my opponent knows the truth. I'm saddened that he feels that he has to portray something completely erroneous.
We're going to wrap up here this third congressional debate here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Each candidate now has 1 minute for their closing statement. And Representative Phillips, you'll go first.
Well, thank you, Blois, and thank you to my opponent and to all of you who took the time to tune in today. A thoughtful debate and deliberation is what our country needs more than anything. It saddens me that it's so often based on personalities and demeaning natures instead of thoughtful policy. But that is my mission, my friends. And one of the most divisive times in our nation's history has very much illuminated my mission to usher in a new era of innovation, of collaboration, and optimism in our communities and in the halls of Congress. You know, different perspectives are not problems. Those are our opportunities. And when we lead with open hearts and open minds and commit to conversations in which we listen a little bit more and maybe talk a little bit less, we're going to find common ground. And that's exactly what I do in Congress. It demonstrates that. I'm the 27th most bipartisan member, the 12th most bipartisan Democrat. One of every three bills that I co-sponsor was authored by a Republican. And my opponent likes to say that I'm with Nancy Pelosi all the time. Well, she's not real fond of me right now because of some of my disagreements lately. In fact, I voted with her 79 times in the 16th Congress. I voted with Pete Stomper, my Republican colleague, 393 times.
Thank you, Representative Phillips. Kendall Qualls, your closing statement for 1 minute.
Yes, thank you. And, you know, I was 19 years old when I took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. Do you know that that oath has no expiration date? That's why I decided to take a step forward and take a stand for our country. Unfortunately, my opponent, he's aligned himself with the progressive left. He doesn't want you to know that. He hides behind the facade of bipartisanship. There's no amount of hiding that you can do to replace the voting with Nancy Pelosi 99% with House leadership. It's not that she's just voting with her. That actually those votes are not aligned with the values and the business climate of the third district. I know because many people that voted for my opponent last election felt betrayed and they're now supporting my campaign. They trust that I will represent them and their values more consistently in Washington. Today, I'm asking for your vote and I'm asking for your vote with this in mind. We're not gonna agree on 100% of the votes I cast in Washington. But I'll make you proud of that vote that you do cast for me as your next representative. Thank you.
Thank you to both Representative Phillips, Kendall Qualls. If you've just caught the last portion of this debate, it will be posted on WCCORadio.com, or you can watch it on Facebook under WCCO Radio. For full election coverage, you should visit WCCO.com, WCCORadio.com, under the news section and click on the election 2020. All of our behind the ballots, all of our forums, all of our news stories related to the election are there. And our debates have been brought to you by AARP, Minnesota's Corn Growers, and Minnesota's Credit Unions. I'm Blois Olson. I'll be back in the next hour. We'll talk to Alexander Mattison and the Minnesota Vikings about what it was like to get his first NFL start. Blois Olson here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.